Hi there, and welcome to the Work Like a Mother podcast. My name's Amy, and this is my podcast all about motherhood, creativity, business, work, and everything in between. This week, I'm chatting with Ellie Darkins. She's a romance novelist who writes for Mills and Boon and a mother of two. We chat all about how she got started with National Novel Writing Month, the publishing process, and writing with a baby in tow, as well as plenty of other things. I have to apologise again this week because I still had a cold when I was recording this episode, so I do sound a bit nasally, but hopefully you can ignore that and enjoy what Ellie has to say. We also didn't get around to chatting recommendations for romance novels, so if you do want to try out the genre, if this piques your interest, and I've just shared a few of my favourites at the end of the episode, so you can check those out. And in the meantime, enjoy the episode. Hi Ellie, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. For those who don't know who you are, would you like to give us a little brief introduction, who you are, what you do?
Yeah, my name's Ellie Darkins. I write romance novels for Mills and Boon, and I'm a freelance editor and author mentor, so everything to do with books, really.
Lovely. How did you come to write your first book? What's the story behind that?
Well, I was an editor before I was a writer, so I've been an editor pretty much since I left university. So I read English, read lots of books, then went to work reading more books.
Was that freelance or did you work for a publisher? Or
no, for a publisher. I was an editorial assistant sort of pretty much straight out of uni. I was really lucky. And then I worked in academic publishing for quite a long time, which was good grounding in the publishing industry, but not the most exciting books. So then I went and did internships at lots of places with more exciting books, including Mills and Boon. And whilst I was doing all of that work, I was sort of scribbling on the side, and what I was writing was getting closer and closer to what I was reading at the publishers. So I decided to give it a go and try and submit it and see if they liked it.
Fab. And I read on your website that you did a National Novel Writing Month. Can you talk a little bit about that, because I've always wanted to do it, but I always find it a bit daunting. You thought that actually, like, 30 days you have to commit to doing, like, quite a lot of words per day.
It is. So it's National Novel Writing Month. Every November you write a novel in 30 days, or you write 50,000 words of a novel in 30 days, so it's 1,666 or 7 words a day. It's really intense.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I did my first couple when I was working full time in my office job, before I had children, I should say. And it's just a really good way to make a commitment to your writing practice. So the first one that I wrote will never see the light of day, but it got me into the habit of writing and getting past the first chapter or two and really working out how to make a plot work and all the different elements that you see in a book and you don't know until you're trying to write it how they really work.
Yeah.
So even things like, I remember writing my first kiss and thinking, well, I know about kissing.
Yeah.
I've read lots of books about kissing, but I don't know how to put the words in the right order for this to happen and for it to not completely gross me out.
Yeah, never that's mind anyone it's else. Quite hard to be like, actually, I think probably kissing and more than kissing is probably like some of the hardest things to write, so where it doesn't just sound completely cringeworthy and just my dad wrote a porno style, like, awfulness. I
can't even listen to my dad wrote a porno. It's too much even for me.
Oh gosh, yeah, it's a lot. But it's always like there's like extra hands, like you actually have to be quite cognizant of like what actually is happening, so you don't end up with like, oh, he had his hand here and then he had his hand here and then his hand was there. Like, how many does he have? Like,
I've edited erotica before and you're sort of trying to draw a mental picture and you're like, right, so if they're on the desk and his hand is here and his other hand is here and her leg is here, how do they actually stay on the desk?
Yeah, how are they balanced?
You really have to do some mental gymnastics.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. So you obviously first one no go, did you keep doing that? So you did it twice, did you say? Was the second one?
I think I've done 4 or 5. So the first one was a no-go. The second one I left in a drawer for a lot of years, and that was my third or fourth Mills and Boon. But it was my third one that I wrote and thought at the end of it, actually this isn't bad, like this could be something. So then I went and revised it, took about a year of writing and rewriting, and I submitted that one to Mills and Boon and they said thank you but it's not really for us. So then that one sold to a different publisher that it fit more with their style. And then it was my next one that I wrote and then sold that one to Mills and Boon. So it was quite a long journey. And having worked there didn't get me any shortcuts, unfortunately. I wish it had. But I just learned so much.
And so your kind of ultimate aim was to get published by Mills and Boon.
Yeah.
They're the pinnacle.
Yeah, when I write, that's what comes out of my pen. Yeah. I feel like Mills and Boon inside.
Oh, bless you. And they've got a big reputation, Mills and Boon. What is it about them that you love?
I find the stories so escapist, and I start them and I just can't put them down, and I have to be careful not to start a new story sort of as I'm going to bed, because I know that I'll have to stay up. It takes me sort of a couple of hours to read one. And if I start it at 10 o'clock, I know that I'm still going to be awake at midnight. And I remember when I was doing my degree, we did one Mills and Boon on our syllabus in the first year. It was sort of a what is literature type of module. And I remember that was the one book that I missed dinner for in my halls of residence, because I started reading it sort of just before I should have gone down for dinner, and then I just couldn't put it down. And
yeah. And did you read any sort of romance books before, or was that like your first kind of foray into the genre?
I was already
a fan. Yeah. Okay.
It was my granny actually who introduced me. She used to buy them for me. Well, she used to buy them her and her friends, and they would get passed around her friends. And then they would come to me. I was like the last stop on the Mills. Oh,
that's so fun. I love that. I wish we'd had a Mills and Boon on our like syllabus. We didn't have anything as fun as that. Our What Is Literature was really, we had to read, I don't know if you read it, it was Pamela by, oh, I've forgotten his name.
Oh, yeah.
It's really awful. It's like the exact opposite of Mills and Boon. It's really long and it doesn't capture your attention at all.
I remember it was Rescuing Dr. McAllister. I can't remember the author, but I remember the title, so you should go back.
I'm going to do it. I'm writing it down now. So what was it? So for your first one, you didn't publish it with Mills and Boon. What does the sort of process look like to kind of for getting a book published? If you've got, you know, you've revised your, you know, National Novel Writing Month novel, you're ready, it's ready to go. What do you do next for someone who is completely not in the know, as it were?
Normally, the way you would go about it is you send a covering letter to the publishers that you're interested in, and then you think your book might fit, and depending on what they ask for, you probably send a covering letter introducing you, introducing your story and your first three chapters, and a synopsis, which is harder to write than a novel. And you send that off, and then you wait sometimes several months because they are just inundated with so many entries, and then they might email back and request the full, say the full manuscript, which you need to have written before you start querying people. And then normally after that, you might either get, you know, a yes, we want to buy it, or you get a revise and resubmit letter, which is what happened with my one that I eventually sold to Mills and Boon. And then I worked with my editor, Flo, who's amazing. I think three sets of revisions before they actually bought the book.
Oh,
I remember it was sped up a little bit because I sent my query as part of a competition when they were going through entries really, really quickly. So you missed sort of that first sort of 3 month lag. But I submitted to the competition in August and I sold in January. So it was a really long process of revising and revising again.
And when you say revising, like how much changes in that in one revision, would you say?
Oh, it could be rewriting 20,000 words.
Right, so it's quite a big job. Yeah,
yeah, it's a big job.
Yeah.
But hopefully the revisions get smaller each round that you do.
Yeah, yeah. And they're obviously already sort of invested in it if they're asking you to revise it, I suppose.
Yeah.
So you've got a little bit of kind of hope to kind of keep you going.
Yeah, you know, if you get a letter asking you to revise, that they've seen something that they really, really like, because it's a big investment of the editor's time
to
do that, and they wouldn't do it unless they thought that there was a book there that they wanted to buy at the end.
So how many books have you published now? How many?
Seven, including my pre-Mills and Boon one. So six with Mills and Boon and one before.
Fabulous. And how does that kind of fit in the timeline of, like, you having kids as well?
So the year I sold my first one. I also got married, got pregnant, bought a house.
Oh gosh.
And moved out. So that was quite an intense year.
And then
I think I had three or four published, and then I had a break for a year. And then I published another three, and then I had another break. So I'm just writing another one now, but I won't have a book out. But I'll have gone for more than a year without a book out, which seems like a really long time.
Yeah, no, definitely. Although you say that, but you often see, like, when books, you know, if you've got like a favourite author, it can take a couple of years before they have another book out. That's quite common, isn't it?
Work quickly in Mills and Boon. I'd love to be up to sort of four books a year, but I keep having babies.
Yeah, they do get in the way of such things. So were you still working full-time when you first started publishing, or were you already freelance by that point?
Yeah, I worked full-time doing not writing stuff up until my first maternity leave. And then when I came back from maternity leave, I decided to do more writing and less editing because I thought it would fit more easily around being a mum and childcare and that sort of thing. It's a bit more flexible. And then I'm just back three months I've been back from maternity leave this time. So I'm just writing at the moment, doing a tiny little bit of editing. And then when this book is finished, hopefully I'll do a bit more editing.
And when you come to your freelance editing, are you also editing romance novels as well?
I do a bit of everything, but yeah, I do. I really love romance and women's fiction. I really like history and historical fiction. So I do a bit of that as well.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you, this is mostly for my own, like, just so I can write for my own to-read list. What are your favourite romance novels?
Oh, my goodness.
Not to put you so right on the spot there. I know. I mean, I love romance novels. So I particularly like historical romance novels. I'm still fairly new to the genre. So.
Okay, best. Oh, I'm terrible at doing this off the top of my head. Let me think about it. I will give you a list.
Yeah, we'll come back.
Absolute must
come back. And what do you think it is about romance novels specifically? Say you've been reading them sort of your whole life, and you're obviously like super immersed in the genre. Like, what is it that makes them so great?
I think it's the escapism and the lack of compromise.
Yeah.
Like, they're books written by women, for women, about the fantasies that women have. And then they get everything that they want at the end. And if they don't get everything that they want, it's not a romance novel.
Yeah.
So the women win every time. And I just love that. And I don't think you get that in any other genre. Or no other genre makes that the purpose of the genre.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Yeah, yeah, definitely. And I think what I really like is definitely that escapism, but also, like, if I pick up a romance novel, I know that I'm going to, like, there's going to be a happy ending at the end. Like, it's not going to be a surprise twist and, like, everyone's going to die or, like, you know, and especially, like, when you haven't got a lot of headspace for, like, serious fiction and it's, like, very deep and dark and heavy. Like that's not to say there's not conflict and, like, important topics in romance novels, but at least you know at the end, everything's going to be tied up with a bow. You're going to leave feeling satisfied and happy and be like, yes, I'm really happy about what's happened there. Like, not, like, distraught, like, crying on your bed, like, oh, my God, that character, I can't believe it. So that is one of my favourite things about romance novels. So what does your sort of writing process look like? How long does it sort of take?
At the moment, it looks pretty chaotic. I think before my last maternity leave, I had it quite pared down. I was streamlined, I was focused, and then this time I'd left myself the first 10,000 words written before I went on maternity leave.
Yeah.
I was like, I've got this is fine.
Just pick it back up again.
I came back, I wrote the next 15,000, like, stuck to the notes that I'd left myself which I forgot.
Good work, past Ellie.
Until I'd been back for 2 or 3 weeks and I'd written myself chapter by chapter breakdowns. I was like, this is brilliant. And then I hit, like, the third act where, so I've introduced the characters, I've introduced their conflicts, they've been falling in love, getting to know each other, they've had this big, amazing, emotional kiss, and then I'm like, what now?
Yeah, what happens?
How do I keep them apart for another however many thousand words? So it's been quite fun, actually, going, so then I took myself back to the very beginning, read everything that I'd written so far. I've read loads of my friends' books, loads of books from the line, just to remind myself of how these things are structured and how they work, and sort of feeling myself back into it. So normally I write start to finish with no toing and froing, but this time I've just had like little snippets of scenes here and there, and I'm just trying to weave them all together now to make something.
Yeah,
that would make my editor cry when I send it to her. Or make her cry in a good way.
That would be good.
I like crying in a good way.
Yeah, not I'd crying about it. So how long does it sort of take you to write a book from start to finish, would you say? Like the first ready to send to the editor, something to go?
I'd say working at the rate I am now, probably 3 or 4 months.
Okay, so not all that long really.
No, and if I were doing it full time, I'd be looking at probably 8 books a year.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's a lot of books.
In fact, I have a friend who does, I think, between 6 and 8 books a year and works full time as a nurse for the NHS.
Oh my gosh. That is next level, isn't it?
Insane work ethic.
Yeah. And how also, like, I feel like it would be hard to keep track of all your characters and what they were up to, because I assume that that's partly then some are out getting edited, they'll come back for revision.
Yeah, I find that difficult enough with 2 or 3 books a year. I don't know how she does it.
Yeah. Where do you, I mean, this is like the typical, if you write books, I'm sure you have this question all the time, where do you get your inspiration from? But like, obviously you're saying 2 or 3 books a year, that's like 2 or 3 stories, like at least 6 main characters. Where do they all come from, would you say?
Yeah, I sort of collect ideas from everywhere. So everywhere I've been on holiday ever, I think it's featured in a novel or an idea for a story at some point. Everyone I speak to, everyone who knows that I'm a writer knows that anything they tell me is fair game. It might end up in a book one day. But you just start with something really, really small and work outwards from that point. So the book that I'm writing at the moment, I went to Edinburgh on holiday a few years ago. I've been quite a few times and I'd not used it yet. So I was like, right, we'll have an Edinburgh book.
Nice, I love Edinburgh.
And I quite fancied writing a wedding because I go to lots of weddings because, well, I was about to say I'm in my 20s, I'm not anymore. but, you know, I've had a few years of lots of weddings every year, so there's always things that you can collect from there. So I was like, well, a wedding book in Edinburgh, that's fine. Everyone loves the Highlands at the moment because of Outlander, so they will go to the Highlands as well. So you just sort of collect little ideas from everywhere and fit them together and then sort of work outwards to try and build a story around.
I know sort of romance novels in particular do kind of hinge on a fair few like tropes, not in a bad way, but like there's kind of a few things that you see crop up time and time again. Which are your sort of favourites to work with?
Ooh, I love A Secret Baby.
Nice.
And the book I'm writing at the moment, that's a one night stand baby. So they're always really fun because your characters have already had sex. So you know that there's all of that sexual tension there.
Yeah.
But then with the books that I write, they tend not to have sex again, at least until sort of quite late on in the story. It's much more about the emotional relationship. So you've already like got so much tension there to work with. And then you have to try and keep them apart for the rest of the book. And pregnancy is just insane anyway. So it always throws up some nice things. So I love A Secret Baby. I love if you've got your hero and heroine stuck together in a small place.
Yeah,
that they can't get out of, so like in a cabin, snowed in or something like that, where they just can't escape each other. What else do I really like? Oh, office romance. Ooh. Love an office romance. I think because I don't work in an office anymore.
Yeah. Quite a bit awkward if you do. I mean, like, especially if you were, you know, someone else in the office, be like, oh, is this about me? Oh gosh.
Yeah, and I think because I don't have to deal with like the mundane photocopying and coffee machine and all that kind of stuff, you can just build like a nice little Mad Men style.
Yeah, nice. Okay, I like
situation
that.
Situation in your head.
Yeah. So what does a sort of, I don't know, there's no such thing as a typical week, but what does sort of typical week look like for you and sort of your work and childcare and things like that?
Well, at the moment, I'm just sort of easing back into work. So my older daughter, she does a few sort of short days at preschool. And my baby, she's just doing half a day at a childminder at the moment. So I tend to work when I can, really, which is nap times and after they've gone to bed. Yeah. Luckily, the baby's napping quite well. So I managed to get a couple of sort of good hour stints of writing in the day that I'm with her.
Are there any sort of characters from your books that you'd like to revisit? How are you? Are they all sort of, they've had their happy endings now, not coming back?
Yeah, I haven't thought about that. So I think they're done. I can't see myself bringing any of them back.
No. Oh.
I left them all happy, so it would be, I think if I'd planned to do that, so you solve like lots of their conflicts and leave them very happy, but you know that there's something that's going to come back and trouble them, you know, if they've got married and you know that something's going to come up when they decide to start a family, that sort of thing. If I'd planned to go back and revisit, but I can't imagine like undoing a happy ending to get another book out of them.
That's fair enough. And do you have any advice for budding authors, as it were, anyone else who wants to sort of do what you do?
Yeah, it's not very original advice, but it's just write. Just write whenever you can, and don't listen to the people who say write every day, because you can't always, or you don't want to. If you've got nothing left in the well, like sit and read a book or watch a box set and, you know, build up some ideas. But there's no shortcut to writing other than just one word after another and keep going.
And do you think, I mean, I think probably one of the big sort of stumbling blocks is you say like the, I don't know, like the, like seeing it needs revision, but like getting over the kind of like self-criticism of like your own writing. Like, do you find that or?
Yeah. And that is a really tricky one. And I think that is why NaNoWriMo, so National Novel Writing Month, is so good, because you can't agonize over your first chapter when you've got to write another 1600 words that night. You just write and don't look back. Write fast, write dirty, and don't worry about it. And, you know, it took me 3 manuscripts, 3 full novels to get to the point where I was happy with what I was writing.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that the first 2 were wasted. They were just, you know, a really long writing exercise.
Yeah. What was it about that third one that you thought, like, yes, this is good enough now?
Like, it seemed to have more of a structure and more of a plot and more conflict than the others. The others I'd started with characters and not really thought too much what I was going to do with them.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought about what was going to make them fall in love with each other and what was going to keep them apart for the length of the book and stop them giving into those feelings. And I think by the third one, I just worked out more how to do that.
Yeah, lovely. So this is kind of the questions I ask everyone, is I believe you can have it all, but not all at once. So what would you say are the things you're sort of prioritising in the moment and the things that you're maybe letting go for now? Maybe you'll come back to them, maybe not in the future.
So I'm writing a lot now. I'm not doing so much editing because I knew that when I came back to work, I wouldn't be able to do both and have the baby at home with me as much as I wanted her to be. So when this book's finished, I'll probably step up the editing a little bit more, but just like a gradual return to work rather than going back with everything straight away. Also housework.
Yep.
Housework doesn't get done.
That's fair enough.
We decided to get a cleaner for a few months when the first baby was born, and it's 3 years later and she's still here. And I'm not apologetic at all.
I don't think you should be.
I know that my kitchen and bathroom and floors are going to be clean once a week and I'm fine with that.
I think that's fair enough. And I think you're kind of buying back your own time as well to a certain extent when you have someone come in and do those sorts of things. It's like either I could spend an hour doing this or I can spend an hour doing something else, whether it's work or
maybe 2,000 words.
That's it.
Oh, and I don't iron anything.
Oh, no, I'm not. I mean, unless it absolutely needs it, then
no to ironing.
No, and people talk about the ironing piles and I'm like, I just put things away. And like, if I get it out of the cupboard and it needs an iron, fine, I'll iron that one thing. I'm not going to sit and iron everything, not knowing what I'm going to be wearing that that month. My godmother used to iron jeans, which I just always thought was just... I mean, that was even when I was a child, I was like, that seems ridiculous. I don't know why you would do that. What do you do on the days when it sort of all goes wrong? Obviously, say like the baby's naps quite well at the moment and means you can get some writing done, but obviously there's days when they're ill or something goes wrong or they can't go to nursery or preschool, whatever it is. What's your sort of strategies for coping in such a situation?
I WhatsApp my friends.
Yeah.
and chances are, because I've got quite a big group of friends that I made when I had my first baby, I did an amazing pregnancy yoga class and made friends that way. And then I did the same class when I was pregnant the second time. And I've got NCT friends. So chances are someone is having an equally bad day,
yeah.
in which case we go to the park, or driving around till the baby falls asleep and then going drive through Costa. That's always a winner.
Nice, nice. I've not done that before.
And then a little nap on the driveway in the car.
Nice.
Yeah.
I've sometimes I've seen people using the Wi-Fi in their car, you know, like drive to get the baby to sleep, keep the laptop on the seat, and then
my car has a lot of Netflix.
That's a good one. And last but certainly not least, are there any other mums that you think other people should, that you follow or that you know about, that you think other people would find inspiring or interesting?
My mum crew, who have saved me from insanity many times.
Yeah.
So my friend Vanessa is Mrs. Social online. She set up her business when she was pregnant with her second baby. So she's still on maternity leave at the moment. And my friend Kristen is Oso Coco. And I think she went freelance during her first pregnancy. So the three of us have sort of gone freelance at the same time. And my friend Ellie, who started an amazing like luxury homeware business called Family's Home, with all sorts of handcrafted like ethical homewares.
Oh, nice. I'm definitely going to check that out. Love a good ethical luxury homeware. Fab. Well, thanks very much for chatting with me today. I really appreciate it.
No, thank you for having me. This has been so much fun.
Fabulous. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. And that would be all, folks, except that I also promised that I would chat to you about some of my favourite romance novels in case you fancy dabbling in the genre. My favourites tend to be historical romance, as I mentioned in the podcast. Those are definitely my favourite. But I do have one contemporary novel to share with you that I would highly recommend, which is The Wedding Date by Jasmine Guillory. It was published this year, and it's just like a romantic comedy movie, but in book form. The hero and heroine meet in a lift in a hotel. She's going to see her sister, and he's there for a wedding, and he needs a date. He needs someone to pretend to be his girlfriend. And they get stuck in the lift together. They eat some cheese that she's been saving for her sister, and she agrees that she's going to accompany him to this wedding. And of course, things snowball from there. It's a really like heartwarming novel. I really loved it. I read it in about 2 days, which is pretty impressive these days for me. And I'm really excited about the sequel that's coming out later this year. The others I've got for you are all historical novels. The first is the Brothers Sinister series by Courtney Milan. I absolutely love Courtney Milan's writing. It's really smart. She's a kind of self-confessed nerd of knowing all of the details. They're just really like progressive and a bit political, and I love the women that she writes, and I love the men that she writes because they fall in love with the women that she writes. I particularly love in this series The Countess Conspiracy, but that's the third book in the series, and so I would really recommend reading the first two first because you then love the characters in the third even more, because they kind of feature in the other ones, and it's just fantastic. I think I just like gasped with joy when there's a big reveal at the end, and it just made me so happy. So I would really love you to read that one too. The others are Anything by Sarah McLean. She's an absolute genius. If you ask me, she's the kind of queen of the genre. I particularly love, I don't know what the name of the series is called, but it starts with a book called A Rogue by Any Other Name. She has some great pun titles that it's worth checking out. The other one is One Good Earl Deserves a Lover. And it's basically four guys who've set up a gambling hall in London, and they're, you know, renowned rogues, and kind of how they fall in love and who they fall in love with is just brilliant. And the fourth book, I think if you can guess what happens, then you're smarter than me, but it is particularly good. She also has some really great recommendations on her website. It's worth going to her website, which I think is sarahmclean.net, I want to say. But I'll pop it in the show notes for you because she has a huge list of all of the romance novels that she recommends. And I think she writes a column for a newspaper about romance novels, so she really does know her stuff. The other place that's really great for recommendations for romance novels is Book Riot. They have loads of articles on their website all about romance novels, and a dedicated romance novel podcast called When in Romance. It's a little bit kind of industry newsy, which I really enjoy, but not everyone will be into, but they do have some really great recommendations on there as well. And my last but not least recommendation is the Spindle Cove series by Tessa Dare. It kind of has some of the same like progressive political leanings as the Courtney Milan books that I mentioned, but it's just it's about this kind of town by the sea in the south coast of England, and kind of these wayward women who live there. And my favourite is A Week to Be Wicked, in which our heroine needs to go to Scotland to show off one of her scientific discoveries. She enlists the help of the local rogue to pretend to elope with her so that she can get there. And of course, in the week that follows, they start to fall in love, and it's just lovely. It's really great, and I love all of the science stuff in it as well, because I think that's not maybe what you expect from a romance novel set in the past. So yeah, it's really great. So I hope that you check those out. You can find all of the show notes of the podcast, including these recommendations, at amyliz.co.uk/podcast. And you can jump onto Twitter or Instagram to chat to me about romance novels, which I would love, because I always want to talk about them, at amylizblog. That's AmyLizBlog. And on my website, you can also sign up for the newsletter, which is how you can find out about all things Work Like a Mother. Next week, I'm interviewing one of my absolute heroes, Rachel Hills. She's the author of The Sex Myth, and we chat about her writing, how she kind of came to write that book, what that book is all about, and why she, unlike me, thinks that you really can have it all as a mother. So I hope you're looking forward to that as much as I was when I was going to interview her, and we'll speak soon.